first, you need to be honest. As a founder, you don't have product market fit and you need to do something. You need to start figuring out
other things. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically every Wednesday we had a team meeting with all the company doing brainstorming about, okay, we don't have product market fit. We have 2 years. If not, we're going to die.
And how did you know you didn't have product market fit?
Because we were measuring every transaction, every customer that we got, and they didn't keep getting lessons. It was like they bought a package of 10 lessons and they only use a few, and that's it. They didn't want to come back. So it was a lot of energy to acquire a customer that at the end didn't want to use.
Yeah. You feel like you're pulling people through the process. You're pulling them into the, rather than pushing their way in. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Ignite podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bell. Today, we're delighted to have Ignacio Avial on the program. He's co-founder and CEO of Hokali. I keep saying that incorrectly. Thanks for coming on the program, Ignacio. I would love to get an intro from you for the audience.
Hey, Brian. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to connect again after a few years. My name is Ignacio Avial. I'm CEO of Hokali. We are a startup based in San Francisco. We started 4 years ago. As you might notice, I have a strong accent. I was born and raised in Argentina, and I moved here to the U.S. 9 years ago. It's been a while. I came directly to San Francisco. I fall in love with the city, with the people, with innovation.
Yeah.
And I decided
it's
to
a beautiful
stay.
City. I mean, people that visit, I mean, leave their hearts there is the old phrase, right?
I love it. I was in love from the very first day with San Francisco. People are so open, and especially because of the innovation and entrepreneurial lifestyle that you can find here. When I decided to move here to San Francisco, I was talking with my cousin. He used to live here, and he told me, you should go to San Francisco. That's the best place in the world for innovation. And yeah, I remember I also Googled that day surfing San Francisco, and I saw there were a few surfers surfing down the Golden Gate Bridge. And it's amazing, but they are very good surfing here as well.
Yeah, you can go right out to Outer Sunset there. I used to live in the Inner Sunset, 12th and Lawton is where I lived when I lived in SF. That was 10 years ago, 13 years ago. Wow. But I never surfed. It was just always too cold. I lived in Hawaii, actually, so we should talk about that. Yeah, so
I
what's your
it.
Connection to Hawaii, and why did you, what inspired you to name the company after like a Hawaiian word?
Great question. So we started Hokali as a B2C sports lesson marketplace, and the first sport that we picked up was surfing. I'm a surfer since I am 9 years old. That's one of my passions. And I discovered with my friend and business partner, Thomas, that it was very difficult in San Francisco to find a surf instructor. So many friends and family members asked me, hey, where I can find a surf instructor? And we discovered, wow, it's difficult to Google and search for surf instructors. And that's why we started this company. So the connection between people and coaches was one of the reasons. I used to
it
work
was as simple as that. Just you guys were looking for a surf instructor, couldn't find one easily on Yelp or Google Maps or whatever. And you're just like, you know what? There has to be a better way here.
Exactly. So I used to work as a surf instructor when I was at the university, and also as a kite surf instructor. So I had some knowledge about that. And yeah, the first lesson that we connect was in Pacific. I still remember that day. It was a rainy day in January. And we went at Pacifica Beach to check it out. Okay, is this going to happen? Is the student going to meet the instructor? After that lesson, we saw the smile of that instructor that we met a few days before. And the first student, and we discovered, wow, there is something here. Like they went into the water, a very cold day, the smile in their face. And actually that student, after that lesson, she bought like a package of 10 lessons. And that was the very beginning of the company connecting these sport enthusiasts with surf instructors. And that's why of the Hawaiian inspiration, Hokali is an invention. We were inspired by Hawaiian names, and I didn't want to copy any real name. And we were inspired by words meaning nature, ocean. We started playing around, and after a few hours, Hokali was born.
Wow, that's amazing. And then, walk us through the, let's go back to the Argentina days. Like, what was it like to grow up in Argentina? There's been some political stuff going on there recently, right? I kind of heard rumblings of. I don't follow the news at all. But okay. Yeah, tell us about what prompted the move to the US, what was it like growing up in Argentina and all that stuff.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Argentina. My background, it's kind of different from what you can find in entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley. I graduated as a lawyer in Argentina and in Buenos Aires. And, you know, lifestyle in Argentina is quite different from the US. Argentina is all about hanging out with your friends, with your family. Every Sunday, you will hang out with your family and you will cook an Argentinian barbecue where basically the father or somebody in the family is going to cook the Argentinian barbecue. It's a slow cooking meat style. And it's quite interesting. Argentinians love to hang out and share the barbecue or maybe share a mate. Mate is a very popular drink in Argentina. It's a blend of...
For people who don't know, I think I know what it is, but yeah, the audience.
Mate is it's like a tea. It's a blend of green tea that Argentinians drink with a straw in a cup. Mm. And it's kind of like the coffee that Argentinians drink.
It's very, I think the brand here is Urban Mate, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. But here
that's
the
not
US,
traditional, yeah.
Exactly. That's just a fusion, but Argentinian mate, it's a ritual. There is a ritual of how you start the mate. There are some rules when you are drinking with friends, but the mate is all about sharing. You share a moment, you talk about whatever, and you drink a mate. But you know, like Americans, you have like same style, but with beers. Like I don't know, every time I hang out with a friend here in the US, they invite me a beer, and it's kind of the same. Let's chat. Yeah,
you have different kinds of mate and you're like, here, try this kind of blend of mate. This is my own special blend. It's like craft mate.
Not really. No, this is very, it's just one style of mate. There are no many flavors.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, there are a few, but it's not that common.
It's the thing you do socially. You drink this tea together.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a traditional drink and that's it.
What are the other herbs in it? It's green tea and what else?
Just green tea. That's
it's just a style of green tea, basically.
Yeah.
People don't realize how good green tea is for you. I drink it every day, mainly as a way to keep, like, I don't know, this kind of oral fixation I have with, like, drinking stuff all day. But I, you know, I got up to 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day, and I was feeling horrible. I was just like, I'm tired and irritable. And so I started doing a green tea every other time, right? So I do a cup of coffee in the morning, then a green tea mid-morning, a cup of coffee after lunch. Green tea mid-afternoon. And it's worked out so awesome.
That's great. Yeah, I kind of do the same. I start with mate, and then I go to coffee, and then mate. Yeah. And at the end of the day, I mean, mate has matein. It's kind of the caffeine. It's more natural.
Yeah. I'm actually 62 years old. People don't know that. No, I'm joking.
Oh, really?
No, I'm joking. But green tea is really good for the antioxidants, aging benefits. The other thing I've started doing recently is the kratom. Have you heard of this? Kratom or kratom?
No. Tell me a bit more.
It's a Southeast Asian herb. You can buy it at like smoke shops and stuff like that. They're probably going to outlaw it at some point because it has mild opiate effects.
Oh, really?
yeah, it's illegal in some places, in some states, I think. But basically, you mix it with hot water and it's really, really kind of like matcha green tea, like real just earthy. You actually have to mix like honey or cranberry juice or something like that, or grapefruit juice. And you just kind of, I'm sipping it right now.
Nice.
In this cup, it just makes you feel great. Like I do it now. It's become my podcast ritual. When I record a podcast, I sip on kratom.
Nice. Yeah, so great. So yeah, mate is a ritual. At the end, it's a ritual of how you prepare that, and then the ritual to talk with somebody to share. So yeah, Argentina, it's all about sharing a barbecue, a mate. I love that.
I really miss
Argentinian. And so, yeah, I studied in Argentina. I graduated as a lawyer. And that was my very beginning as an entrepreneur because I was at the university with 25 years old. It was 1 year before my graduation. And I was talking with a friend like, hey, what if I create a website? And I started getting clients from there. It was 2010.
So you're in law school and you're starting to create websites for people.
Yeah. And
that's hilarious.
That was the beginning of my entrepreneurial.
And you're just doing it to like pay the law school tuition and just pay the bills. You're just doing these websites on the side, just starting to code, doing some front end.
Yeah. So that was the beginning. I I launched my personal first lawyer website, and I started getting clients. So I after graduation, a few days after that, I had so many new clients, and I rent an office in Buenos Aires, and we started growing. I started getting many, many clients. I started learning about SEO. It was 2010. We were in first page at Google at the very beginning, paying Google ads as well.
Yep.
And it was 26 years old with a bunch of clients. Nobody understand how I did that. And after that first company, I was, okay, I want to go to the US. I want to do this big. And that was why I decided
to... having fun making the websites, and you're like, well, where do all the websites get made? Pretty much the US, right? So
no, actually, I created first website for me. I created my own law firm in the website, and I started getting clients, going to the court with those clients. And it was, okay, I want to get companies from the US that maybe they want to get a lawyer here in Argentina. That was my inspiration of going big. I want to go to the US. And that's how I decided to came here 9 years ago.
Did you just come here and then keep working with your clients online? How did that transition go?
So I had a business partner in Argentina. I was working from the US a lot for these Argentinian clients. And it was a lucky coincidence, but one of my mentors, a professor in Argentina, in one of the most prestigious universities in Argentina, he told me, I'm going to the US in a few months. And I told him, hey, me too. I want to go to the US. And he told me, I'm going to Stanford, a one-year visiting scholar experience. I need an assistant. And I was, I mean, I want to go there and do my experience. And that was the very beginning of my experience in the US. After going to the library with him, I realized that I was not looking for that in the US at the end. I was not looking to stay in the library researching in topics that at the end I was not that interested in.
But what were the topics?
He was studying the discussion between the right of protesting versus the right of writing in the street. I mean, when they...
Oh, these were like legal, you know, civil law kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. The constitutional law.
Constitutional law. Wow.
Yeah.
It turns out you can't storm the Capitol on January 6th. That's probably illegal. Unless you have a permit. Anyway.
So yeah, crazy story. I mean, of how I finally got into the US. And then living in San Francisco, I was impressed by all the startups, all the technology, all the things that were happening there. And I created my first business right after I decided to stop doing the researcher assistant experience. I started the Pampa Barbecue. So I started this Argentinian barbecue experience in San Francisco that you can still check it out. The business is still running. Mm. So we create this Argentinian asado experience where basically you can contract real Argentinians that will show up at your house and they will cook a real Argentinian barbecue. So you will be living a real
Argentinian.
Yeah, you can live a real Argentinian.
Come cater an actual, like, and cook it all their live.
Exactly.
And that's amazing.
And they will make you feel like you're in Argentina for a few hours.
Yeah.
Dressing like an Argentinian gaucho, the Argentinian cowboy. It's a real experience. It's not just the good food, of course. And that was the first business in San Francisco. After a few years, I discovered, okay, I'm not a chef. This is not what I love to do. Mm. I got an offer right after I decided to move forward in a different direction with that business. Argentinian friend, he's a startup founder of Weeby. It's an IoT startup. It's based in Silicon Valley. And I started working with the founder. And that was my first real experience in tech. For me, working at Weeby was my master in tech, and it was amazing. I worked for this startup for 2 years. I learned a lot. I tried to meet in every aspect of the business. I tried to go every meeting that Lucas, the CEO, had. I tried to share that meeting with him and learn from him. And it was an amazing experience, learning how to manage engineers, how to think about the product, the problem solution.
What was your role there? Like, was it one role, many roles?
many roles, small startup, but the title was business development manager.
BDM.
But doing many things, and it was super fun.
Yeah, startups are the best. I mean, that's what I always advise young kids I run into is like, you know, and by kids, I mean like, you know, early 20s. I'm like, do you have a passion and something you need to create for the world? Usually the answer is no, they have no idea. Like, I didn't figure out what I wanted to do until I was 40. I'm like, okay, great. Do you have an idea for a company or business? They usually don't. I'm like, okay, great. Go work at a startup, any startup, and just try to find the one that's the most passionate. And it doesn't actually matter because you're going to, like in your experience, do all kinds of, wear lots of different hats and learn lots of things and have a great time.
You know, I agree. With people. Yeah. 100%. They will pay you to learn.
Right.
That's the beauty of that. I agree 100%. I always advise that. Go and work in a startup. You will learn and they will pay you for that. Of course, a win-win scenario. You will, of course, give a lot to the company.
Yeah.
But at the end, you will learn more and you will get a salary. So that was a real game changer experience for me, working in Silicon Valley in a real startup. And after a few years, I was ready to start my tech company. After a few years of learning working near the CEO, and after so many friends and family start asking me where they can find surf instructors, talking with my co-founder, hey, what we can do, this is the place to create a startup and live the life. And we start Hokkali. 2 years after that, I started the company. And it was, I thought it was going to be easier.
That's funny. So like going into this, you're like, all right, we need to create this marketplace because we can't find a good one. And let's try to do it. And it should be easy, right?
Exactly. That was. I think every people that never work in a startup before, they think like, okay, it's super easy. You have the idea and you start making money and you're going to get rich. And it doesn't work like that. It's the opposite. It's it's trying to figure out and to make something people want.
Ooh, that, there's the YC phrase.
Yeah.
Build something people want, right?
Exactly. The problem is that founders, they want to make their idea, and maybe it's a totally different idea of what the people really want. But I got it. I got into Y Combinator with the B2C sports lesson marketplace.
So how long from starting the company to applying to YC was that?
It was 2 years.
2 years. So you're already working on this thing for 2 years.
Yeah. So we
applied. And you got in on your first application or was it like a
repeat?
No,
it was the second one.
Wow.
So we applied the first time and we got into the interview. We had an interview with Gustav. It was an amazing interview. We prepared so many times that interview. Mm. And after a few days, they gave us a very good feedback that they will pass. And they will
probably. What was the feedback the first time?
So Gustav. He's an expert in the marketplace industry. As you might know, he was one of the growth experts at Airbnb. And the first question that he asked us was, okay, how you will win the demand? I know that the problem here is not in the supply, it's in the demand. How you will...
Yeah, there's lots of instructors out there. You can just go sign them up.
Exactly.
And then it's like, how will you get people knocking down your doorstep on the demand side? Yeah.
Exactly. And at that moment, yeah, we were doing SEO, paid ads. And we didn't have a real answer to that. I mean, we're still like figuring out.
Mm. Well, yeah, what's your wedge? It's a question I usually ask. I phrase it like, what's your wedge for acquiring customers?
Yeah.
It's your unique advantage that is hard to replicate.
It's super hard. At the end, that's the challenge of B2C, right? How you will get direct clients.
And consumers are used to basically not paying anything for anything.
Exactly. Right?
It's just going to get worse with AI and robotics in the coming years. robotic surf instructor out in Pacifica.
Business to business is so much better because the companies, they have money and they're open to pay at the end consumer.
It's about having a YC fund, right? Because I normally invest in B2B SaaS. I think it's the best business model ever invented. And there's lots of research on that to corroborate that. But B2C is tough, man. I have 125 portfolio companies and counting, and I have four shutdowns. They're all consumer. That's how tough it is.
Wow.
All four of my shutdowns. I've never had a B2B SaaS company go out of business. It just shut down and return capital, because like by time you have like 10 or 20K of monthly recurring revenue, that's about when I'd like to invest. You're kind of like a going concern. You're default alive. You could trim everything back and just be the co-founders if you had to. The AI is just further exacerbating that or enabling that. And then, yeah, but consumer is really tough.
Yeah, I learned a lot in those 2 years as a B2C marketplace. We made so many things. We kind of hacked Google. And that was one of the reasons, I think, that why we got into YC the second time. So what we did...
figured out a demand hack.
Yeah, we figured out a demand hack.
Oh.
And Michael Seibel, the second interview that we had, the second time that we applied, yeah. I think he loved that. I mean, I don't...
Like impressed with the demand hack? What was the demand hack? Can you share it or...
Yeah, I can. So at the end, what we did was we create multiple Google Maps locations for surf lessons. Mm. That was one of the main keywords, for example.
Oh,
and,
nice.
And I had like 100 people that gave me the Google pin. So
yeah,
I started putting pins in 100 locations in San Francisco.
Yeah, Here's a surf spot.
And at the end, if you search surf lessons, we were in first page at Google in San Francisco. We made it. It was kind of crazy.
And that caught the attention of Michael because he's like, this is cool. Yeah, like these guys have figured something out. Yeah.
They figured out how to hack the demand there. And if they don't have pro market fit, they will figure out to make it happen.
Well, I mean, so much of anything is like, it's just acquiring customers. Because if you can get people to pay, if you can acquire them, then you'll learn what else they need and build other stuff.
But exactly.
Like most of the battle is just demand gen.
It's
just getting people to sign up and use the product. I ran marketing demand gen for a few startups. You might call it growth hacking today, but you know, I finally realized I had to change the product because I had hacked everything I could on the demand side. You know what I mean? I'd done every like email lifecycle marketing experiment, every like Google AdWords hack, every Facebook, blah, 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 like everything I could possibly do landing page wise, messaging wise. We'd run hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of experiments. And I was on like my third startup at this point doing demand gen. And I was like, I think I need to change like how people interact with the product. And that's how I became a PM and actually built products, is because I was trying to hack together customer acquisition strategies. And I just realized that I'm going to have to change the product if I want people to convert at a higher rate. It's plain and simple. And so I started like going to the product meetings at my startup and saying, I think we got to change this and we got to change that. And I think it'll have this impact on the conversion rate. And I kind of came through the back door of product.
Interesting. That way.
Yeah.
So we kind of did the same by talking to our customers. We started doing a lot of customer discovery. There is an amazing video that you can find in YouTube, Eric Misikowski. He was a YC partner. About how to do customer discovery correctly. And it's something that every founder needs to do at the very beginning, right? And we learned at the end that the target audience that we were targeting at that moment, adults from 30 to 45 years old, they didn't have time to learn a new sport. There's a lot of frustration. They don't have time, frustration. Acquisition cost was super high. We did so many things, the Google hack and many others. And at the end, we discovered that there were 20% of our audience were kids. And in that 20%, we saw that the kids had more retention, the kids learn faster, the kids have more fun, they have more time, and also the parents, they need somebody to take care of the kids. And that made a lot of sense to us. Okay, let's focus 100% in kids. And we discovered this opportunity with schools. Basically, they need these instructors, sports instructors, music, art, you name it, for enrichment activities for after schools.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we pivoted in the B2B after school marketplace.
So oh, wow.
That's what we are today. And I'm so happy that I don't have to pay any ad.
Such an obvious idea. That's such a good idea, right? Because like, there's all these after school programs, and my kids went, they did like the soccer shots at their, you know, like after school kind of daycare thing. I think it was Champions back in the Bay Area.
Okay.
Had this little after school at Sandpiper Elementary in Redwood Shores, where we lived in Silicon Valley, or whatever you call that peninsula. And yeah, so that's so, walk us through that. So you started as, you know, basically almost like a consumer to consumer marketplace, and then you unlocked in these customer discoveries. Hey, mm-hmm. there's this demand at schools. Walk us through kind of what was the aha moment there?
Yeah, so we decided, so we were super honest. First, you need to be honest as a founder. Mm. You don't have product market fit and you need to do something. You need to start figuring out
other things. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically every Wednesday we had a team meeting with all the company doing brainstorming about, okay, we don't have product market fit. We have 2 years. If not, we're going to
die. And
how
did you know you didn't have product market fit?
Because we were measuring every transaction, every customer that we got, and they didn't keep getting lessons. It was like they bought a package of 10 lessons and they only use a few, and that's it. They didn't want to come back. So it was a lot of energy to acquire a customer that at the end didn't want to use.
Yeah, you feel like you're pulling people through the process. You're pulling them into the, rather than pushing their way in.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good way to describe it. That, you know, my understanding is like when I'm talking to founders, I'm like, tell me about, you know, what level of product market fit you think you have and how do you know,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's like, usually it's like, we have the waiting list just keeps growing and we can't get to everybody. That's kind of what you're looking for. Like we have this wait list and it's doubling every week and we literally need to raise money so we can go onboard these people.
Exactly.
It's kind of like they're waiting outside, waiting to get into our platform. And we just can't, like, we can't even onboard them fast enough. That's kind of what I'm looking for as an investor, but does that sound right?
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, I mean, you feel it. You know, when you have product market fit. For us, was the lack of retention and high customer acquisition costs. It was super expensive. At the end, we were selling $1 for 90 cents, and it was not working. But after the pivot, we decided to pivot. Every Wednesday was the group meeting, all the company brainstorming ideas of how we can solve this lack of product market fit, what we can do. After doing a lot of customer discovery, we figured out that the kids, the parents were super happy about Hokali. There was retention there. And we decided to focus 100% in kids. We decided to, okay, let's push all the ads to parents. So, and it was interesting, but a few weeks after that, we didn't get any parent. I mean, it was hard. Mm. The marketing team was, I know it's not getting so easy for us to acquire parents. And one of the guys, I think it was my co-founder, he mentioned, okay, let's try to knock some doors at schools. The parents are at the school. And literally one of the team members got the ownership of that task. Okay, your task is for next week.
Go talk to after school programs. Yeah.
Exactly. I remember that guy, he's part of the sales team today. A few days after that, he slacked me, hey, I need help. There is a school that they want to buy Hokali. And I was like, what?
What does that even mean?
Yeah. What is happening? I mean, yeah. It was the first school that we knocked the door. It was not the first sale, but it was almost there.
Yeah.
And the second one, it was the first sale. It was easy. No ads. And it was a good revenue coming from a school requesting instructors for their after-school programs. They were requesting yoga instructors, jiu-jitsu.
Wow.
And that was the first sign of, wow, that sale was super easy.
You just felt it immediately. Like, oh.
Immediately.
Yeah, this just feels easier. Yeah.
And
now you know that, who your customer is. It's all the after-school programs and all the schools, all like everywhere, private, public, everywhere. And they all have this.
Exactly.
I have one here that they should probably, you know, use you guys to get these, you know, yeah.
You should
maybe I'll make an intro. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. So today we are working in San Francisco and we expanded to Los Angeles. And for example,
walk us through why you focused. I think I know the answer, but just for audience edification, why did you choose to kind of focus on SF and then move to LA? What was that thinking?
So
like?
We are from SF first.
Right. Why not go to East Bay or Sacramento or you know, Fresno I think or whatever. Yeah.
San Franciscans are the best early adopters.
Usually on the bleeding edge of stuff. Yeah.
And yeah, we are San Franciscans founders working in San Francisco. We did that before. We started with the surfing lesson in San Francisco, and the people here are super friendly and open-minded to try new things. And it worked very good. For the first year, we started to learn the B2B sales process. I mean, we were experts in the B2C.
Yeah.
And now,
had okay. all your like little customer demand hacks. But now what was that process like setting up this new process?
We started learning. We create a sales team with SDRs in charge of booking meetings with decision makers.
Yeah.
We create the account exec position that they are in charge of that first meeting and the first contract. And we have now the customer success team that they take care of the clients after the first contract for upselling and future contracts. And basically, yeah, we start to measure everything and we create a sales machine today. I don't spend money in ads. And I know that for every 10 meetings that I book with decision makers, 4 of them convert into a real contract. We have 40% of sales conversion
rate. 40% conversion is off the charts for B2B sales.
It's a lot.
So out of 10 meetings, 4 of them will turn into the signed contracts.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's insane product market fit.
Yeah.
I know that because I've done sales and marketing and product for, you know, in this realm for decades now. And like,
it's insane.
That's insane. What's the reach out to meeting demo conversion rate?
So it's from cold lead to meeting done, it's 3%.
3% is pretty good. That's also like about 50% higher, I think.
Yeah.
But typically it's like 1 or 2%. Yeah.
It's a 3% and it's 100% scrapping website and outbound strategy. That's how.
Right. Yeah.
That's,
you just reach out and say blah, blah, blah on LinkedIn or cold email or whatever, right? What are all the channels that you're using to kind of book those?
So cold emailing is working very good and LinkedIn. And now we are starting with cold calling as well.
So just calling up the head of whatever that school is.
Yeah, calling and trying to reach the school director or after school director.
Very cool. Good old fashioned roll up your sleeves. And then how are you guys pricing it now that it's you're selling to companies? Is it on an as used basis? Is there like a platform fee and then some variable costs? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, great question. So we take a 45% commission for every contract that we sign. So for example, if we have a $100 contract, $45 goes to Hokali, $55 goes to the instructor. For the instructor, we provide insurance. We have a very strong insurance that costs a ton of money. Hokali takes care of all the, of course, sales process, support, all the insurance. And the software is free for after school director. So we provide the free software for school director and we charge this commission to every instructor that get a program through Hokali.
Very cool. And 45%, I mean, it sounds high, right? I mean, a lot of, you know, like the Play Store and the App Store from Apple, they're getting a lot of blowback for their 30%. And I think it goes to 15 over time. And I used to work at Azure Marketplace and AWS Marketplace, and they've just really lowered their fees over time. I think Azure now, if you're in co-sell, will go down to like 2.5%. Tell us why it needs to be 45%, because it sounds high.
Yeah, it's high. There is a lot of operation costs, sales costs behind the company.
Yeah,
we have this sales team and we have an operation team taking care of all the onboarding of every instructor. We create the Hokali Academy where we are vetting every instructor working with us and we are helping them to become real instructors.
Oh.
At the end, it's kind of a scholarship that they pay in the future with this.
It's a curated garden of instructors here that... And there's real cost to verifying them, onboarding them, insuring them.
Doing the background check, paying for the CPR first aid certificate.
Right, because they're going to be going to a school, right? They got to have the background check, the fingerprints and all that stuff,
Exactly. And we just created a new course made by Hokali where we are training them for class management, child abuse prevention, concussion prevention. So at the end, this is a scholarship that they're paying in the future with this commission base. And for them, we are helping them to get into the schools. Without Hokali, for them, it's kind of impossible. They don't know how to do it. They don't have the legal requirements to do it. And yeah, we help them to accomplish those certifications. And we are creating a new category here, Brian, as well. So we are giving the opportunity for students at the university that maybe they are part of a basketball team, soccer team, and
right,
and they can make an amazing part-time gig by teaching at elementary schools.
Right.
And instead of
play for the local high school or college team, now I can get paid. What's the average instructor make per hour?
So in San Francisco, we are talking on average $150 per hour.
Wow. Wow.
It's a very good pay. Yeah.
That's insane. Like, yeah. So if you're a college or high school student, this is, yeah, I play on a D1, blah, 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 school, soccer team, you know, state, college, even $150. And then you take half of that roughly and $75 an hour. That's well above the minimum wage. I mean, if you're in college, your alternative is probably making, you know, $20-$30 an hour somewhere at some retail store or something like that. So you're really unlocking a ton of value for the supply side of the market as well.
Yeah, so we really want to create a new category here. We want to, you know, as Uber, when they started, they created an Uber driver and they didn't hire taxi drivers. Same as Airbnb, when they started, they didn't use hotels. They they created the host experience.
Yeah, you want an asset-light model, yeah.
So this is the same. We are opening a new category in the market. Hopefully these amazing students, they can make a part-time gig and make something that they love to do. And the kids, they engage so good with these students. The experience is amazing. It's a very good experience.
That's got to feel good, right? To build something that people really want, right? On both sides.
And you're, also you're to
enriching,
see...
enriching children's lives. You're enabling these other people that have a passion for whatever sport or thing it is to go teach it to others. And yeah, that's so amazing.
You know, one of the most amazing experience that I had as a surfing coach, it was in a summer camp in LA and teaching these kids how to surf. And they learn so fast and they have so much fun and the smiles of the kids. And that's amazing. It's an amazing experience. And it's a real mission that we have to give the opportunity to every kid to discover their passions. Mm. And help instructors to make a living doing what they love, because they don't know how to make this extra revenue, and Hokali is there to help them and to help the kids. It's a win-win scenario for everybody.
That's so amazing. So what's your vision for, you know, where this all goes in 5 or 10 years?
Great question. So Hokali, we are disrupting the education industry. We will keep expanding Hokali in the U.S. We are now in 2 cities. We will go to the main cities in the U.S. Our goal in 5 years is to reach 5,000 schools. Today, we are in 98 schools.
Wow.
And at the end, we want to help, and we will unlock again the B2C business that we didn't have that good experience at the beginning because of the high customer acquisition cost. In the future, Hokali will also provide this private lesson for parents that maybe they want to get an
extra. The marketplace doesn't go away. It's still there, right? You could still book instructors on it if you're an individual consumer.
Yeah, it's not on yet. I mean, we turn it off. We need to make focus in one business model.
You did turn off that side of the business. Wow, interesting.
Yeah, 100%. Wow. Yes. And now we are 100% B2B. The focus, we are still a small team growing with the focus on getting more schools. And
yeah,
I didn't mention that we got profitability as well last year.
Default alive now.
We are default alive.
That's amazing. Yes. Do you think you'll raise again to try to accelerate growth, or
Yeah, Brian. Yeah, so we are planning to raise a seed round at the end of this year.
Nice.
And we are planning to do this massive expansion in 5 cities.
This is why I think YC should just call their rounds pre-seed now. You know how they call them seed?
Yeah.
I was telling some of the partners here, I was like, it's not a seed round. These are pre-seed companies at very high valuations. But anyway, yeah, a little bone to pick there.
Yeah. You're right.
Because you're really going now to seed, right? Now that you're, you know, in seed territory. But that's hilarious. And what's funny is your valuation will probably be almost what it was 2 years ago when you go to seed.
Yeah, maybe a bit more, but not,
yeah, you hope
not
so.
Too much.
Yeah. But the market has shifted a lot since 22.
Yeah, yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
2 years is a long time. And yeah, it's definitely.
But I think for seed rounds is still okay. I mean, maybe for Series A,
it's really been hit really hard. Yeah. A has become this thing where you have to get to like 3 to 5 million of ARR now to be.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
And that used to be, it used to be like 1 million. And even 500K could get you an A in some cases. But now it's. It's 3. It's crazy. And which opens up, you know, for pre-seed seed funds like ours, you know, to invest. It just opens up a lot of opportunity for us. I love this story because it's really a story of like spotting something in the market, getting started, and then, you know, just continuing to iterate and find the gap in the market. Because it wasn't like this, like, flash in the pan, oh, this is going to be amazing. And it was like, you know, startups are kind of like squiggly lines, right? And it's not just all up and to the right. You're kind of like, you started, you didn't even get into YC the first time. You had to persevere and prove. Yeah. And then you got in. And then what you thought you were doing ended up being something else adjacent to what you originally thought. So I love that story of just perseverance, sticking with it, finding the demand.
Exactly. And at the end, founders, we need to be more humble. And maybe the first idea, it was okay, the driver at the beginning, but we need to really hear the voice of the customer. That's our mission, to identify what they want. It's not what the founder wants. Mm. And I see that pattern happen so many times. The founders are so focused in the first idea and what they think is the solution to that problem. But our role as founders is to really understand what people want.
Very cool, man. Well, why don't we wrap up with a quick rapid fire sesh? Sound good?
Okay. Yeah, let's go.
What's the first thing you do every morning?
So I pray.
Argentina is a Catholic country?
Yeah, we're Catholic.
That's right, yeah.
So I pray in my bed and then I prepare my mate. I start my day drinking my mate. And then I start the day, but that's the very first thing.
Inspire me to go buy some mate. But this is a two-parter kind of question. Like, what's your favorite book you recommend to entrepreneurs?
So I just read this book is amazing. The Great CEO Within, from Matt Mockery. So I recommend this book after you find product market fit. Don't read the book if you don't have product market fit, because maybe, yeah, you will go into a direction that you don't need to go, like hiring employees and creating a team, being a leader. And for this moment where we are right now, growing from 20 people to 100 people, it's the Bible of become a professional CEO, understand how to lead every team, how to organize your agenda. I used to work all the day, replying email, going to meeting, and now is I don't have too much time. I need to organize my week. I need to organize every day in advance. Mm. In which this is just a random example of how that book teach me how to become a better CEO.
Yeah, I love that. What about a podcast besides the Ignite podcast, of course?
Yeah, so for entrepreneurs, I'm a super fan of the Y Combinator podcast, and super fan of the Dalton and Michael Sable.
Yeah, I've watched channel. Those. Yeah, they're really good.
That's the Bible for entrepreneurs. It's perfect. You have every topic such that you need to know if you are at the very beginning. And it's kind of like an amazing way to know all the knowledge of Y Combinator is there.
Yeah,
they are teaching the basics to everybody. And I also recommend another YouTuber that I hear a lot. Where it was like that my very early stage as an entrepreneur, Eugenio Sher. He's from Spain, and he really inspired me at the very beginning. He has a book, Entrepreneurial Mindset, and I really recommend that book if you're a Latino. I think it's in Spanish, but I really respect Eugenio Sher. He's a real entrepreneur, and he has very good information for your mindset. How to create a real entrepreneurial mindset.
Very cool. If you could have dinner with any historical figure, who would it be and why?
I will choose Sean Lennon.
John Lennon. Wow. I love that. I'm a huge Beatles fan. I think I have like right here on my right shoulder is the Sgt. Pepper album cover.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really admire him as a musician, as a...
Do you remember the first time you heard a Beatles song?
Not the first time.
I was always around growing up, but do you remember like when you really got into it? Like how old are you? When was that?
Yeah, I was, I think, 7 years old.
Seven is when you first really got into it. So for me, it was around. I kind of appreciated it, but it was actually in my mid-20s. I was starting to play guitar.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, this music's really good. I need to, you know the songs, right? Because they're all like number one hits. But if you go back and actually listen to all the albums, like almost every song in there is a top 10 or top 40, just amazing song.
Yeah.
Like almost every song that you hear is just like beautifully artistic and well written and produced, and like there's no other music like it, really.
It's crazy, but we are still listening John Lennon in the radio in everywhere, and his music is still alive. Beatles music is still alive.
Yeah. What's your favorite John Lennon song?
Imagine.
Oh, of course, yeah. One of the, I think the very first song I ever played on piano, besides like Hot Cross Buns or something like that, was Imagine.
So my father, he's a super fan of John Lennon, and that's why I got into this.
Yeah. Did you ever see Paul McCartney live?
Never.
Okay. I did get a chance to see him in San Francisco, actually. He came to Outside Lands.
How was it?
Oh, amazing. I was like 100 feet from the stage. It was just incredible, right? Paul's my favorite Beatle. I love John Lennon as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
And I do Transcendental Meditation, which they did in the 60s, which is compatible with Catholicism. It's kind of the same stuff. You just get given a mantra and you just say it over and over again. And they did it with the Maharishi very famously in the late 60s. Which probably set Transcendental Meditation back a decade or two because it got overhyped, right? But anyway, that's not why I do it, but I... You know, it's funny because I knew they did it. You ever seen the documentary? The big one that's like 10 episodes?
I watch not all the episodes, but yeah, that's an amazing documentary.
Yeah, it's so awesome. It's what I'm really excited about with AI, actually. You know, this generative music AI that's coming is we're going to be able to generate new Beatles songs that sound like the Beatles wrote it.
So there is this last song that they tweaked the voice of John Lennon through the AI and sounds amazing.
Yeah. I heard that one recently. They just did that one in the last few years, right?
Yeah. It was a few years ago. The voice of John, they really made it like a original voice of him. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. So cool. Gosh, I could talk about the Beatles for another hour. It'd be a whole podcast, but... What's a trend in tech that excites you most right now? Besides AI.
In tech. So what I will say this last year in the Y Combinator event, Sam Altman mentioned that the future of AI is in education.
Mm.
And he mentioned that he imagined that actually today we do that with ChatGPT. I guess that you ask so many things, and I have my tutor today is kind of ChatGPT.
Right.
If I have a question, I go to ChatGPT.
I've been using Perplexity actually a lot more because it's all up to date.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the future of mentoring and tutoring is going to be through AI. And
yeah,
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
How we can teach the Hokkaido instructors to become better instructors through AI. But I want the kids having these real people at school teaching them music, sport. But when you are an adult, it's okay. I mean, I love AI. I'm an adult. I learn a lot.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm very excited to create more instructors by using AI.
Yeah.
So we can have them teaching kids with no technology. It's something that really, really inspired me.
Yeah, it's going to democratize access to to everything. And a company we actually invested in the last batch for YC was Sonya. I don't know if you saw these guys, but they're using AI, generative AI for cognitive behavioral therapy. And I saw it, I was like, yeah, this obviously has to exist. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was just so obvious, and they had a great team, and I was just really excited to be on that cap table. Just a really cool company. What's the biggest risk you've ever taken?
I think changing my career as a lawyer into the entrepreneurial lifestyle. I had my career back in Argentina, my law firm. My business was doing very good. I was growing, and I had a feeling in my heart that I was in the incorrect direction, and I was looking for something different.
Yeah.
And I was looking for a real entrepreneurial experience. And when I did that change in my life, it was super hard. That was the first crisis that I have in my life. I had a few panic attacks, I remember, because all the society were like, judging me, like, you are crazy. Why are you dropping off your life?
Right. You just spent all this time and money getting a JD, and now you're going to go like build websites or something? Like, what is that about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm so happy that I did that crazy and risky thing.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the most risky things I've done.
That's
in my
really
life.
Cool. Really cool. Well, this was an amazing conversation. I could talk to you for another hour. It was great to catch up. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure. And I will give you a mate if I see you face to face.
I'm going to take you up on that. We should do an Argentine. I was thinking we should do like an Argentinian party with the barbecue and the mate and like in San Francisco sometime, right? Maybe make it a Team Ignite thing, and you know.
It's my treat. Next time I see you, I will give you a mate.
All right. I will keep you to that. I'll hold you to that. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye, Brian. Bye.